Thank you very much, Teresa. And I'm delighted to be here with all of you this morning for some discussion and some meditation, question and answer. And I think it would be good if we begin with just a short meditation period. Simply let your mind relax. There is nothing that we have to do, nothing to add or get rid of. Just let your mind rest in its own basic nature, in its own place. All right. I'm happy to be here with you this morning at this last, I understand this is the last meeting of this group coming together, and I'm honored to be able to speak with you at your last meeting. Often the first and the last meeting have some kind of special quality to them. And I'm also glad to hear that you decided this would be the last meeting before I talked and not afterwards. So I'm relieved about that. We know that there are many different aspects to Buddhist practice. There is an aspect of prayer and ritual. there is an aspect of chanting and that kind of meditation. But it seems appropriate in this day and age, and certainly in this place, and with this group, to speak a bit about the aspect of Buddhism that is the mind science aspect. The aspect that is connected with inquiry into our basic situation. How we function as human beings in this world. How our mind works. How it works in connection with our body and our environment. And the Buddha taught ways for us to analyze and learn about these topics. And he taught that the more that you do that, the more wisdom you have, the happier you are, the more easy it is to live as a human being. And most importantly, this is the way for us to tap into our own potential, our own inherent qualities of compassion, of clarity of mind, of internal courage and strength, and the ability to help ourselves and others. This is what the Buddha taught as the Bodhisattva path to enlightenment. And by practicing on it, we cause these qualities within us to come out, to grow. So, when we start this inquiry, this path of discovery, we can do so from different perspectives. And I know that you've been studying and practicing Buddhism, some of you for many years, so you're familiar with this. But I would like to today look particularly at this area of meditation and in connection with daily life. And my own teacher said that the period of our ordinary waking state, when we are up and about doing whatever we're doing during the day, is actually our most important meditation session, because it's the longest. So when we meditate formally, we might sit on a cushion and do something that looks like very good practice, but it's short. It doesn't last very long. When we get up and we start interacting with the world, if we can mix meditation with that, then we are able to meditate for a long period of time. And in fact, if you look at the history of the great Indian masters, then many times, even though they did a lot of practice in retreat, they still had some place where they were stuck. So, for example, with the master Tilopa of India, he practiced for 12 years in meditation retreat with his legs chained to the floor, so he would never get up. But after his retreat was over, he had not realized completely enlightenment. And so his teacher did not say to him, go back and meditate again in retreat until you realize. He sent him to a city and he told him to get a job and work while meditating. And through this, it was through this practice that Tilopa was able to attain enlightenment. So we should not feel that these types of teachings on practicing meditation with work are just for people who have to work, you know, and oh, it would be so much better if they could be in the monastery, but we'll just give you this little method so you can practice while you're working, as if it's a lesser teaching. It's not like that. In fact, one interpretation of the Mahayana is that the Buddha taught the Mahayana specifically for lay people. That was why the Buddha started to give the Mahayana teachings. And if you look at sutras like the Vimalakirti Nirdesh Sutra, the sutra requested by Vimalakirti, then he was a lay person. And many of the profound meditation teachings were given in an exchange between him and Manjushri. And a lot of that sutra is his own teachings, what he learned by applying the teaching in his daily life. So we can approach these teachings with the attitude of being a meditator. Not the attitude of I am this type of worker or that type of worker and I'm trying to fit Buddhist meditation in somehow 5 minutes here or there. But really the attitude, I am a meditator. And I make my work and my daily life part of my meditation practice. One place that we can start learning how to do this is with a quotation by the Buddha, short quotation from the sutras, where the Buddha said, "When you have independence, everything is happiness. When you do not have independence, everything is suffering." So the difference between happiness and suffering is independence. And in a basic way, all people have some idea of this, understand this. But the problem is that they focus on it in an incorrect way. They focus on it from the perspective of the outer world. So, for example, children want to be independent of their parents. People who work feel like they want more independence from their boss. Right? Sometimes we feel like we want more independence from other members of our family. So the ordinary way people approach this problem is trying to get outer independence. But the problem with that approach is it doesn't work. It's constantly a struggle to try to free ourselves from whatever situation we feel is making us not be able to be free. And this becomes particularly acute, intense, when we get sick, when we start to age, when we start to approach death. Because from that, there can be no independence. And if the more we struggle against that, the more difficult it is. So therefore, the first thing we can see in our inquiry is we need to focus not on outer independence, we need to focus on inner independence. And if we can gain this inner independence, then whatever is happening on the outside will not disturb, will not take away our inner independence. So we will have genuine freedom. Freedom that is not vulnerable to outer conditions. That is the genuine freedom. If we want this freedom, we can't just wish for it. We have to look in a scientific way, in a precise way, at what is on the inside preventing us from being free. What is that? And what we discover when we ask that question is, from a Buddhist perspective, it is our own thoughts that are keeping us imprisoned, keeping us hostage. And particularly in the modern world, this is more of an issue. Because in the modern world is a world where thoughts are activated more and more than ever before. In the old days, people used to do a lot more physical things, physical work connected with the land, connected with their own livelihood. Whereas in the modern world, we work in offices, we work with a lot of electronic things, and there is not much of a natural rhythm anymore between day and night, because we have lights all the time, we have television, we have movies, all these things that take us out of the natural connection we have with the earth and stimulate our thoughts. So from the Eastern perspective of looking at the way of looking at a person, one can do so from the perspective of the elements. And the element of the thoughts are connected with the element of wind. So in this modern world, we have less connection with the earth and much more stimulation from wind, from all of this electronic stimulation, computers, BlackBerry, email, all those kinds of things. And what that does to us as people is to make us more anxious, more worried. You know, in the modern world now, we have things like sleep clinic, because so many people can't sleep. And so this is the modern condition that we have to understand clearly, is the situation that we live in. And so the question is, how can we take back control from all of our thoughts about all of these outer things which are changing all the time, which are constantly making us feel one way or another way? How can we recover control of ourselves? Become more centered and more stable. Right? This is the area that we need to concentrate on. And it has to be a subtle way that we look at this question, because we can't just tell ourselves, don't think, stop thinking. That doesn't work. You can't force your mind to do one thing or another. The more we try to force mind to do something, the more it resists. So we have to have a more subtle approach. An approach that has some different perspectives to it. And this is what I really wanted to discuss with you today. So how does, when we think and we get fixated on things, how does that work? If we can understand that then we can start to understand some of the remedies that we can use. So if we look at our mind when it gets upset, when it gets worried, when it has strong emotions, then one quality we can see that it has that's a problem is intense fixation. Meaning that we continually think about this same issue, this same problem over and over again. That's one thing that can happen to us. We're constantly worried about some particular thing. It might change from day to day, but when it's actually happening, then it's like we have this on our mind and we can't get it out. So we have to figure out a way to help mind to be more relaxed in its focus. Right? Not so concentrated on one thing. And one way that we can do that, one simple way, is to contemplate change. The Buddha called this the meditation on impermanence. And it's simple, but it can be very effective. So when we find ourselves too wrapped up in some problem at work or at home, then it's helpful to remember that this whole situation is impermanent. These people who I'm having this particular problem with or issue, they were born and they will die. I myself may not be here 1 hour from now. The whole situation that I am worried about did not exist before, and there is a time that it will not exist again. And even Buddhist contemplations on impermanence include thinking about how our whole universe at one time did not exist. And in the future, the sun will run out of hydrogen, explode, and our earth will be consumed in fire. So our whole basis for existence is not stable. Now, the point of thinking like this is not to scare us. It's not to make us depressed. The point of thinking like this is to help our mind have a broader perspective. If it has a broader perspective, it's more relaxed. It's more open. Clear. So why don't we try a brief exercise? You can think of some issue, some problem that you might have had recently. And think about it. Really let yourself experience the kind of mental difficulty a little bit that this problem has been causing. And then contemplate how you yourself, the other actors in this situation, your thoughts and feelings about it have changed and will change in the future. that everything about this difficult situation has a beginning and an end. And let your mind relax with that. All right, we'll try it for a little bit. All right. The Buddha taught that when we suffer, it's because our mind is clinging to something as being real, as being solid. And so that's why he used the examples to see life as like a dream, like an illusion. And this meditation on impermanence helps us to do that. When you can remember that whoever you are interacting with, whatever is happening, is not something solid and permanent, but is born and lives and dies, comes and goes. It's much easier to relate to life as being like a dream, like an illusion. And then our mind naturally relaxes, naturally opens. Does anyone have any comments or questions about this particular point?
Yeah, I have one. I have thought about this for a long time and it puzzled me a lot. But the question is the time scale. So if one thing, if we know something will change over 100 years, true, the fact is not solid. However, the impact to me in the time scale I care, it's almost no change.
Exactly. And that's why the Buddha taught both called gross impermanence and subtle impermanence. So the gross impermanence is what you just described over a long period of time. But actually, impermanence is happening on a much smaller scale than that. Because every moment is completely different from the moment that came before. Every moment arises from its own causes and conditions. What happens to us is we confuse because each moment looks very similar to the last. We confuse it all into one. Right? So, well, here we have very nice electronic candle, right? But if we had a candle, regular candle, then we can light that candle and we can come back an hour later and think the candle is still burning. But really, every moment of that flame needs its own causes and conditions in order to exist. So every moment is different from the one that came before. That's what we have to understand. Because our tendency is to cling to the permanence in the particular period that we are interested in. Right? So let me just say one more thing and then I'd like to hear what you have to say. So, one personal experience I had of this was the World Trade Center. Because my teacher, when we went to New York, used to love to go to the World Trade Center and go to the top. So, we used to go 2 or 3 times a year. The last time I went was in August 2001. And when I went to this world, would go to this World Trade Center, I used to think, what could ever make this fall down? This is going to be here for forever. And I thought about the old archaeologists, you know, who uncover the civilization. But I said, for the new archaeologists, it'll be easy because everything will be here, you know, and they don't have to dig for it. But then in one instant, that huge building just vanished. Because the causes and conditions for it to appear stopped coming together. And as soon as they stopped, that building was gone as if it had never existed. No trace. So this is what we have to understand about our experience, is that moment by moment, it is arising and ceasing. And actually, if you go one step further, you can't find the tiniest moment of time where something exists. That's called the emptiness of time. Right? That's a very profound topic. It's not easy to understand right away. But logically, we can see 1 minute is divided into 60 seconds. So there's no such thing as, you know, if we apply this practically, we want to say to ourselves, well, I feel bad right now. So then you ask, well, how long are you feeling bad for? Well, maybe like 2 hours. I've been feeling bad for 2 hours. So, okay, so you try to find the exact time that you're feeling bad. 2 hours does not exist as anything. It's just a name we give to when a certain amount of time has passed. So you divide 2 hours into 120 minutes. Well, you say, well, maybe then I was feeling bad for 1 minute. But even 1 minute is just a name given to 60 seconds. And even second is divisible into however many infinite number of smaller parts you want. So we can understand, we can't even find the amount of time we are really having a problem. And then you rest in that knowledge. And your mind relaxes. That's how to use the emptiness of time in meditation. Anyone else?
If you don't mind, I truly understand what you said. In fact, we talk about it for a long time. However, I'll give you a real example in the daily life, and I think most people may share that in this area. Take for example, the fear of unemployment that goes on in the back, probably in many people's mind over many years.
Absolutely. So this is at the start, we can know that in our lives we have so many things to deal with, and keeping a job or finding a job is one, right? So just at the outset we can say, okay, I know I'm going to have all of these difficult things I have to deal with. I want my mind to be clear when I have to deal with them. Right? So, what is it that makes mind unclear? Fear. Right? So, we might have to be unemployed. We might have to look for work. And when we do that, it's nice if our mind can stay relaxed. So how can we make sure that we can do that with as little fear as possible? Right? So what we have to understand is fear is a thought. It is a thought that is thinking about the future. And the future is empty. Emptiness, because it doesn't exist now. Right? So the only thing that we really that really exists that we experience is this present moment. The more we worry about the future, the more we suffer. So we have to find the methods that bring us back to our present life. Because you know what happens? If your mind is accustomed to fear, it doesn't matter if you have the most lucrative job in the world. You will still be afraid. And we know this. We've all dealt with people like that. You know, one good example, I think, is Ted Turner. You know Ted Turner, head of CNN? So a few years ago, Ted Turner was trying to take over CBS. And he was not being successful. And he said, in a newspaper interview, I feel terrible because they're going to put on my grave, my gravestone, he couldn't get CBS. Right? Yeah. It's funny because it's ridiculous. From our perspective, somebody who's this multi-millionaire, you know, so successful, started CNN. But from his perspective, that was his honest feeling. Because this is what the Buddha taught. It's about your mind. It's not about your outer situation. So it's very important for us to work now with our fear and use these methods to help it calm down. To bring us back to the present moment of our life. Because the present moment of our life, that's all we have.
So when you talk about thinking about our experience of the dream, are you also thinking of the present moment of the dream? Or
if we become fixated on the present moment and that causes suffering, then it's important to think the present moment is a dream also. But what I'm talking about more is really experiencing the present moment. And when you're experiencing the present moment, you don't have thoughts about it. You're just in it completely.
Yeah, there are one misunderstanding, I think, when people hear that Buddhists talk about thinking of our life or experience a dream, they think that our experience, all our experience are not real, which is not the message that we want people to get. That we don't have any real experience, that we should just treat our life as a play or something, that nothing real, so nothing matters. I think that's a misunderstanding.
Well, it's a series of stages. Because the true nature of our life, the most profound thing you can say about it is you can't say anything. Because it's beyond concept. We start by thinking that it's real. So the remedy for that is to understand it's like a dream. Then our mind relaxes. But then if we start to think, oh, it's like a dream, so it doesn't mean anything, then we have to go beyond that. And the ultimate wisdom is to realize the true nature that's beyond all ideas of what it might be. And that's something, obviously, that is a real step-by-step progression. But thinking about impermanence, thinking about emptiness, like the emptiness of time, the emptiness of the future, these are steps that help lessen our mind from fixation on things. So that it's easier to relax, easier to experience this nature that is beyond concept. That's called prajnaparamita, but is really beyond even that name. And I want to also talk about with you and practice some meditations to connect more with that. But I first want to ask if anyone has more comments or things that they would like to ask. Okay. So the next meditation that I'd like to introduce and discuss with you has three parts to it. The first part has as its purpose, when we talked before about the elements of the wind of thoughts making us go all over, as opposed to the element of the earth being grounding and stable. Right? So how do we connect back with the element of the earth in meditation? The way to do that is to, when you sit in a meditation posture first, really to come back and connect with the body. So you can feel your body's actual substance, its feeling. You know, rather than being so much in the thinking mind, connect with the part of awareness that is in the body. So let's just do that in a simple way now. We're going to just let mind rest in meditation, but really let your mind drop. Drop down into the lower part of your body and feel the part of your body that's connected with the ground, connected with your seat, your feet on the floor. Just let your mind rest right in that. If you find that meditation more difficult to do with your eyes open, then you can close your eyes and really let your awareness settle in connection with the ground, in its connection with the earth. All right. So now what we are doing, what we've accomplished with that, is to give ourselves a stable seat, stable ground. So that when lots of conditions come blowing us one way or another, we're able to stay firm, strong. Second step is connected with the heart. So the heart is the aspect of our awareness that is either closed towards the world, meaning afraid, angry, distant. It's like that, or it's open, meaning receptive. Sensitive. So now that we have a stable ground, the next step is to turn our heart and open it with the attitude of warmth, friendliness towards the outside. I'm not afraid. I am not afraid to receive others, to be connected with them, to show them kindness. Right? To really open our heart to the needs of others. So let's again sit in the meditation, feel the connection with the ground, stability, and then focus on the heart and opening the heart with kindness, with love towards the outside. Now we're getting ready to go out and interact with the world. How are we going to do that? With an open and kind heart. All right. Sometimes it doesn't feel very easy to open the heart in that way. Can feel like you try, but there's a block. When you have that experience, then one method you can try is just relax. Don't think, I have to do something. I have to be a better person. I have to be nicer to people. That's only making you more rigid inside, more afraid. So let yourself really be who you are. No judgment. No one saying, you have to be better, you have to be more like this or that. Really just connecting with the Buddha who's inside your heart. And that can help to allow the natural love and compassion to manifest, to come out. So, in terms of how we are going to go out and connect with the world, we have these first two parts. Right? The first is being grounded, stable. Second part is in terms of our attitude towards others and the outside situations, open, kind, unafraid. And the third part is connected with our sense experience. So during the day, we are going to have so many things that we see, that we hear, especially. Also, smells, tastes, bodily sensations. So what is our view towards these? This is very important in our daily life. Because normally what we do is we just start thinking right away. We see something and we start thinking about it. So what we want to do is introduce a gap where we just allow ourselves to have the direct sense experience. In the Buddhist teachings, in Sanskrit this is called pramana. It means direct cognition. Direct meaning non-conceptual, meaning we are not naming anything, we're not judging anything, we're not putting on to a label, this is a cup, this is my cup, this is a good cup or a bad cup, this is my computer, this is my email, I have to do this and that. We are just experiencing it with our direct perception, completely. Connecting with direct perception. And then, of course, thoughts come in and start to think about all the different things. But you always have this chance to come back and experience this pure perception of direct cognition. where your mind is able to relax because it's not judging. It's not analyzing in a thinking way. It's just direct experience of the present moment. So one way to practice with this is if we sit again. And close your eyes. Let your mind relax. And I'm going to tell you to open your eyes. And when I tell you to open your eyes, then just enjoy the direct vision of what you see. No thought, no judgment. You're not naming it. You're just experiencing what is right in front of your eyes. So on the count of three. One, two, three. Let's try it again. Close your eyes. You've got the stable connection with the earth. The open heart. One, two, three. Open your eyes. So particularly, this meditation is helpful to integrate into daily life. Like if you have to work at a desk for long periods of time when you're typing at a computer, then periodically, like every hour, just give yourself a chance. Close your eyes and look above your screen directly. Experience what is ever right there in front of you. Connect with that. And then come back to work. The point is not in meditation to meditate for a long time. Meditation is not like a piece of gum that you try to stretch, right? That's what we do, but that's a misunderstanding. Because just like when we were talking about before, with time, short. So meditation is really short sessions again and again. Even if we're sitting on a cushion for half hour or an hour, what we are doing is meditating for many instants. So when we mix meditation with our daily life, whatever meditation technique we use, we shouldn't think, oh, I need a long time to be able to meditate. But rather we should figure out ways where we can meditate for short periods again and again. Like, so you have to set up in your daily life meditation cushions for yourself all over. So like, you can all think of repetitive things that you do. For example, when you get in a car to drive, don't just start driving. Rest in pure perception. Experience the feel, the vision, sound. For 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 30 seconds. Then drive. When you sit at your desk, when you get up and you sit back down, don't just let your thoughts take you back into what you're doing. Let that be a meditation cushion. Sit, rest. Right, every time you get up and you come back down. Short, not even a minute, if you, to start. And by doing this, you set up many points in time during your day for your mind to relax and become spacious. Now, we can have time for some question and answer, and of course, one can get more into these techniques in a more step-by-step way. The explanations of emptiness, the explanations of meditation. That's what I've spent my adult life doing. I love it. I think there's no better thing to do in any situation is to apply these techniques. Today, of course, this is a short session, so we can't go into everything completely in depth. But if people are interested in exploring more, then we can certainly do that. But I hope that with these methods, you've gotten some taste, some practical, very practical meditation techniques that you can start to use right away. That was what I wanted to be able to share with you today. So if you have questions or comments or things you'd like to know about more, things you've been wondering about, then please ask.
One thing earlier you mentioned, which puzzled me for years, like you talk about the outer independence and the inner independence. The question is, are these two independents totally, truly independent of each other? In other words, if I have a less outer independence in life, will that make me easier to get inner independence?
Well, that's one reason why the Buddha said that the human realm is a good realm to practice Dharma in. Because the classical presentation is that there are like God realms. And in those realms, people are very distracted by happiness. So they don't think meditation practice is important. Human realm, we don't have too much suffering. But we don't have too much happiness, we have good mix. And this is also one of the things about daily life that makes it so helpful to meditation. Because in daily life, when you are not practicing meditation, it's very clear to you, right? You get, your heart starts to beat, or you get a headache, or you get angry, irritable, whatever. You get signals very clearly. But when you do meditation retreat, and you only live in retreat or a monastery, someplace like that, it's very easy to space out. Right? So you sit in meditation for many hours, and then afterwards you say, well, was I meditating? Was I not meditating? I don't really know, but I think I'll have a cup of tea and just enjoy the view, right? So it can become a little bit too relaxed like that. But in daily life, you have constantly reminder. Meditate, meditate, meditate. Why? Because there's so much coming at us this way that we have to deal with. So that's good. That's like our reminder. Take a break and meditate. And that's what happened to Tilopa. He sat in meditation for 12 years. He didn't accomplish completely everything until he went to the city and had to work and had to deal with all of these things. And then that really made his meditation very precise. So, at some point, the more we realize internally, it doesn't matter if we are out externally, we have freedom or not. Right? And that's called, in Buddhism, in the Prajnaparamita Sutras, it talks about the equality or the emptiness of bondage and liberation. So, for example, the way that this is used in an example is if you think of a dream where you dream of being in prison. If you don't know you're dreaming, you really want to get out. And you have strong concept of, I'm in prison, I have to get out. If you don't know you're dreaming. But if you know you're dreaming, then you realize there's no difference between being in the prison and being out of it. And that's the equality of bondage and liberation. That's the equality of samsara and nirvana. Yes.
In your second remedy, you're introducing three parts to control the mind, okay? And among the three, through direct cognition or open heartness, also the thirsty foundation, okay? I see there are no connections to a thought process.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one, still you're replacing a calmness, an emptiness thought to replace a kaya, chaotic thought.
Right.
So a thought replaces another thought. Would it be a gap between a mind and thought? Because we're still not having a calmness of the mind.
In the first method.
Yes.
Well, the method there is to use thoughts to help thoughts calm down into a state of non-thought. So the classic example of this is when you have two sticks and you rub them together, that makes fire that consumes the sticks. So in this type of method where you think about impermanence and you think about emptiness, then that's using your thoughts and rubbing them together, using them to produce the fire of wisdom. And that fire of wisdom dissolves the thoughts.
So it's the wind element against the wind element. Then the result is the fire element. Is it so?
Well, it's a little bit different example. But it's like it's using the energy of thoughts from the inside. Right? One method is, the second method is more connected with a totally different experience than thought experience. Right? But the first method is connected with using the energy of the thought experience to purify it. And the best way to experiment and see the effect that it has on you. Because you can have the experience of first you have very strong clinging and lots of thoughts about something. Right? But then you can remember, like let's say you have an argument with a family member. Right, just as an example. Some difficulty with that other member of your family. That makes you angry. That makes you feel all kinds of emotions about that person. But then you remember, this person will die. Right? I, in this body, will die. And that really helps your thoughts of anger and difficulty to calm down. You know, and then your mind can rest. So that's using thoughts to help the disturbing thoughts relax. Does that make sense?
A little, but I think, yeah, deeply down, okay, if you really have a very peaceful, tranquility mind, okay, our goal is to get rid of the thoughts, right? Now, even though this is maybe in the, it's in the transition period that we're using the thought, a calming thought, to replace the bad thought, still it's a thought. And personally, I prefer the later, the second remedy, because you have no thought.
Mm-hmm.
It's direct knowledge, okay? You are introducing the second remedy. I think it's beneficial to me, okay? May not beneficial to others.
Right, no, that's good. Mm-hmm. So you should use the methods that you find personally beneficial. But also, we should understand that in the end, we are not trying to eliminate thoughts. We are seeking to realize the true nature of mind. And thoughts are also mind. So, actually, the higher meditations help you learn how to meditate on how actually the true nature of thought is beyond thought. That's a more advanced practice. But it's important from the beginning not to see any part of your mind as being bad, as being evil, as being something you have to cut out like surgery, taking out a cancer. Right? Because if we have that attitude, then when a thought comes up, and we see it in a negative way, like an enemy, like a cancer, then that makes us upset. So at the same time, we're developing the attitude towards others of being open. We need to cultivate an attitude towards our own mind that is open and accepting and gentle. It works on the inside and the outside both.
Sometimes you just think, for example, if I was thinking, what I have before lunch, or when I'm going to my house. But to try for a future, I need to think. And but when I have lunch, I just experience it too. So the general question, what's the proper road of thinking?
Right, well, that's exactly right. I mean, thinking is a wonderful component of human intelligence. Right? We're not trying to make ourselves be like animals. Right? We're not trying to make ourselves stupid. But we have to be able to look at this question. When is thinking good and when is it destructive, right? So if it's producing disturbing emotions, inner kind of conflict, that kind of thinking is not helpful. If it's thinking in terms of getting understanding, how can I be of help to others? How can I eat a healthy lunch that's good for me? Right? That isn't just junk food, you know, but how can I take care of myself so that I feel better? How can I take care of the outside world? Right? Then, that way of thinking is beneficial. And we can use our own intelligence to decide, to see the difference.
Question. How about if you do this and then the still people criticize you, you're wrong, and you do try to donate money to the charity, and then the people say, well, you're seeking for your own benefit. And then no matter what you do, some people are going to criticize you anyway.
For sure. For sure. So this helps us to see that we cannot gain happiness by controlling the outside world. And just understanding that is a big help. Because it makes us able to relax. You might really criticize me, but I can't control you. So that makes me relax my attempt to control you a little bit. My experience. You still try to control, right? But at least sometimes you can remember. Right? I cannot really control that. So then, just by understanding that, your mind relaxes. Right? Then, you recognize, well, how can I work with my inner mind? My own anger. My own feeling of being hurt from being criticized. Right? And that's when we use these different techniques, like remembering impermanence, like thinking of emptiness, thinking how this life is like a dream. Maybe even also thinking about the other person and understanding, well, maybe they have an overly critical mind because they're unhappy about something. Right? So then we can have more compassion for them.
Sometimes the more relaxed you are, the more angry the other guy is.
Well, maybe then you can pretend a little bit not to be relaxed. Right? Right? That's called, that's the fifth paramita. Oh, I'm sorry, it's the, not the fifth paramita, the seventh. The seventh paramita, when you count to 10, is called skillful method. Skillful method. So sometimes you have to be skillful, you know. If somebody's criticizing you and you just kind of smile at them, you know, then they think, this person is not hearing me, so I have to, you know, yell more. So on the inside you can be relaxed and calm, but on the outside you can show concern. You know? Right?
So you use stereo, your yourself.
You still be yourself on the inside, but you have more freedom.
Yeah.
Sometimes also, it's you need to show some kind of strength or anger.
Right?
Right? Particularly parents with children. And sometimes then the parents can feel, you know, not so good that they have to do that. But the point is to be able to decide when you need to do that, not be pushed into it by your emotions. So So you keep your inner mind clear and relaxed, but you decide, now is the time I really need to show some kind of strength or something, some kind of emotion. Right? You get to decide. Not your own thoughts and emotions pushing.
So you have to pretend you're angry sometimes.
Sometimes. Sometimes anger is a helpful thing to the other person, you know, particularly with parents and children, or, you know, if there's some long-standing thing, you know, with people, then you have to show them. But you have to be careful when you do that. Just make sure that it's really coming from a genuine place where you really want to benefit the person, benefit the situation. It's not easy. But that's what Buddhist practice is about. It's a journey. It's a path. So we develop these types of skills. We shouldn't expect to be perfect. My teacher used to tell me, don't look for expertise, look for experience.
The older you get, the more experience you get too.
That's right.
And that's why in China we respect the old.
Yeah, that's important. But the mind is always fresh. Every moment. So it doesn't matter, the mind doesn't get old, and it doesn't, of course, there are certain signs of like losing memory and these kinds of things that happen when you get old. But that's just on the outer level. You know, on the inner level, if you can connect with that inner level of awareness that's stable, you realize what's deep inside of yourself that can't be affected by sickness or aging or death. And that's what the Buddha wanted us to connect with. So why don't we practice a little more meditation, and we can see if there are any more questions at the end. We'll do these three steps again. First step is to let your awareness come down into the parts of your body that are connected with the earth. Feel that groundedness and stability. once we have connected with the earth and we feel ourselves stable and grounded, then the next step is, how are we going to relate with the outer world? So we turn our heart to one of fear, from being afraid, from being angry or disconnected. We turn it and we open it. So that it is open towards others with love and kindness. And also open to whatever comes up in our mind. We are going to have an attitude towards it that is filled with love and kindness, acceptance. And then the last thing is to open our eyes and just experience the world completely just as it is. One, two, three. Another very easy practice that you can do if you are, wherever you are, but particularly if you're sitting down, you've been working hard for a while, let your body, as we just did, come back down. And then just roll your shoulders. Really feel it coming from the inside out. And just let your body relax. Are there any other comments or questions?
I just feel the three steps by Master Guru Tisha, right? From the foot, right, to our heart and to our mind. This approach, you're looking at also some other benefits other than, right, besides, okay, right, to calm our thoughts and mind, but also health benefits. Because you're looking at it from the foot, right, the chi energy is from the bottom, moving in that direction, actually also very good for our health, right? Can you explain something about actually something behind this, maybe?
Well, when we have a qi problem, then it's because the qi gets stuck somewhere. And so the main thing with the qi, the subtle energy, is to keep it flowing. If it gets, because it's very strong, so if it gets stuck, then it just starts to want to get out, right? So with this method, the first thing we do with qi is we bring it back into our body, right? This subtle energy. Into connection with the earth. Instead of letting it get sucked into the computer, right? Like that. We bring it back. Then one place that this energy can get stuck very easily is in the heart. When we feel nervous, when we feel tension. And so we work with opening the heart, that particular center of energy. And then the last thing is when all of the different stimulations from the outside world come in and have a chance to make this energy be disturbed. Right? That's why we relate with the senses in this open way, non-judgmental way, non-conceptual way. And when we do that, then instead of energy being disturbed, actually it becomes revitalized. So even if we hear a loud noise or we see something startling, or even if it seems very boring, you know, all of those are thoughts. If we can just have the direct sense experience that's beyond the thought, then we can experience the true nature, and that is revitalizing. We just have to give ourselves the chance to do that. You know, I'll give you one very easy example. Actually, according to the Buddhist texts on these topics, then every object you perceive, there's only one in the entire universe. Right? This object, that's an object of this I-sense consciousness, is totally unique. If we think about it, and we think cup, right, then cup, all of a sudden, our experience goes from being totally unique and incomparable to being abstract and general and vague. Because cup has to cover all the different cups that ever existed in the world. So that's what thoughts do, is they only connect with these abstractions. But our I-sense consciousness is having a completely unique, incomparable experience. That when we allow ourselves to experience it, really can be revitalizing. So if you understand this cup as being totally unique and just one in the whole world, and you just allow yourselves to experience that, compare that type of experience to when you think white cup. Right? It's different. But the first experience is the experience of what is real, what is genuine. The second is the abstraction of thought. So learn to see the difference. I think that's a good place to end in a discussion of our incomparable experience. And I have very much enjoyed this session with you. And if you're interested in getting into any of these topics further, then please let me know, or you can let Teresa know, and we can meet and go into these things more step by step in a more profound way. The teachings of Buddhism are so wonderful and so beneficial, but it's like anything that's worthwhile, it takes time. It's not just, you know, it's just like with any degree. If you get a degree from the back of a cereal box versus a PhD, which you really have to spend a lot of time doing, then obviously the one that takes the more time is the more valuable and meaningful. It's the same thing with Dharma. And that is a wonderful process to engage in, and is this kind of step-by-step exploration, learning, meditation, applying to experience. What a great way to spend our life doing these kinds of things. Yes. By this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may I free all beings. May we live long and be free of illness, enjoy freedom, great resources, and happiness. Next life may we meet in the pure realm. May we always practice Dharma and benefit beings. Shishi.